Welcome to The Lob, your home of in-depth coverage and analysis by These Football Times, a movement of journalism you can trust. Each week, we endeavour to bring you the very best coverage of the game, exploring stories from the past and present, with analysis by expert guests from around the world. Find more of our award-winning content online and in print. In the meantime, enjoy the podcast.
Hi, and welcome to another episode in the second series of The Political Football from These Football Times. Football is a global phenomenon. People who follow it can fall into an obsessive mindset where victory or defeat for their national or club team can define their lives, attitudes, and their understanding of their world around them, both locally and globally. Over time, and in so many places around the world, though, the game's ability to intoxicate and elicit unquestioning devotion to a cause has often been manipulated by states, parties, other political organisations, or indeed individuals, seeking a way to persuade, influence and increase power by using football as a political tool. The Political Football looks at a few examples of such scenarios, considers their context, cause and effect, and how the game has been used by political forces, and also questions whether at time football and footballers have kicked back against these forces or provided a means to counter them. This is The Political Football, and today we'll be looking at Brazil and Bolsonaro. We'll be reflecting on how the election of the new president and how he got elected affects football. I'm Gary Thacker, and I'm delighted to be co-hosting this series with my good friend, Stu Horsfield. How are you doing, Stu?
Yeah, good, thanks, Gary. How are you?
I'm great, mate. I'm really looking forward to this. The home of football, almost, you know, and it's vastly overstated, description, but, you know, the home of Jogo Bonito, the Samba football. It's going to be great talking about Brazilian football.
Yeah, yeah.
Who's our guest?
I was about to say, I think anything to do with Brazil, and you're intertwined, aren't you? You know, football is at the heart of everything in that country, so I think, you know, whatever impacts... You know, and I'm sure, you know, we're going to learn a lot tonight, you know, about different things in Brazil, certainly that I never knew about. But, you know, Brazil, you just think football straight away, don't you? And I think tonight's going to be great.
I absolutely agree, buddy. Who's our guest tonight, mate?
Tonight, it's Freddie Clayton. Freddie is a freelance journalist based between London and Latin America. Been featured in the Daily Telegraph, America's Quarterly, and on Sky Sports. Dreams of covering the Winter Olympics. Keen squash, football and tennis fan, but he doesn't really get cricket and regrets paying through the nose for an Ashes ticket. Oh, still upset that Cuervo missed the penalty for Peru against Denmark. So, with all that said, I think it's time we started to chat about the political situation in Brazil and how it affects football with Freddie.
Cheers, guys. Hi there.
Welcome on board, Freddie.
Thank you.
Hey, Freddie, you all right?
Yeah, doing good.
Excellent.
Just to kick us off, Freddie, give us a little bit of an outline on the political context.
In the recent weeks, it was actually on the January 1st, I think, that Jair Bolsonaro was sworn in as controversial far-right candidate, was sworn in as president of Brazil. Controversial, that is, for well-known statements, racist statements, xenophobic statements, homophobia, transphobia, elected now president of Brazil. Famous also for his sort of no-nonsense tackling of corruption that was kind of the main line of his political mandate. In the build-up to the election, many legendary Brazilian footballers, household names in Europe and across the world, backed Bolsonaro, inciting despair and debate in footballing realms over the relationship between football, fandom and politics, especially in Europe. He is the president, that is, by our standards, a backwards individual, sort of echoes of Trump and all the bad press that he gets, and rightfully so, you might say. But years of corruption and political chaos have forged a very different set of standards that has led Brazil to this moment. And it is this contrast that has brought into sharp focus sort of how many of our footballing icons, the Ronaldinhos and Rivaldos, who have made heroes of themselves in Europe, are still, you know, To what extent are they forgiven? And they are first and foremost Brazilian. And sometimes I think we forget that, that they are allying themselves to a cause that we may not understand.
Yeah, that's a fair comment. I guess there's a history of right-wing leaders in Brazil. So is Bolsonaro just another one in the line, or is he something different? Is he one of the new wave of populist presidents?
Yeah, so he is different. The difference here is that Bolsonaro is that kind of sells himself a little bit like Trump did in the US as this kind of anti-politician, where he's doesn't like the way things have been done. And so Bolsonaro is different in that he doesn't play the game like other politicians have done, which is why I think the discussion here is quite interesting, because it affects football in a sort of new way. He's different in that it is a backlash to the Workers' Party and the leftist presidents that Brazil have had over the last couple of decades, and the amount of trouble that that has brought, and the kind of backlash against not just leftism and leftist politics, but democracy itself. So this is different. This is a different mood. This isn't like right-wing presidents in Brazil in the past. It is born out of a backlash that is very different. And what's more is this isn't like the dictatorships Brazil has had in the past, though it is not too dissimilar to that, you might say. Or the narrative at the moment certainly lends itself to similarities.
Sure. Stu?
It's going to get deep, isn't it, tonight?
This is great.
Listen to what you've just said there, Freddie. I think the first question I've got there, then, from probably my naive point of view, and to be fair, this is how I approach this. Gary's quite well educated and quite well versed in all these. I just sort of pick bits out that people mention. So with what you've just said there, then, is Brazil literally in uncharted territories in terms of every day is a new day, I suppose? So, you know, if we're looking at Trump's America, you know, every day is almost like a new day that's never been experienced before. And is that the feeling in Brazil, that every day is a new day now?
Well, uncharted territory, yeah. I think that would maybe be a good way of putting it without being too overdramatic. He is not different enough in himself and his policies to maybe be considered uncharted. What is uncharted about it is a lot of the world is now living in a time where we assume certain things about rights for people of color and LGBTQ groups, and these kinds of discussions are broadcast worldwide. Social media is massive, and so it is uncharted territory in the sense that this is Western news that is being consumed by the UK, and we see it on the BBC and we see it all over Twitter. In that sense, it's uncharted territory for everybody watching it. Inside Brazil, it is not necessarily uncharted territory in the country's history, but for this generation, you might say, yes, it is uncharted territory. And certainly, there is an element of unpredictability every single day at the moment, because he's so fresh, only sworn in, like I said, in the new year. And so at the moment, every single day is, well, what's going to happen? That, you know, what's going to come out of his mouth today? What group is he going to kind of abuse this day, or what's he going to do this day? So in that sense, at the moment, it's all very unpredictable and, as you said, uncharted.
Yeah. Oof. Okay.
That's pretty good, right? I mean, you say the similarity between what people expect or don't expect from Trump and Bolsonaro seems, you know, very sort of true. You mentioned players who'd supported him. So who were they? Who are they, these sort of well-known players?
Okay, so we've got, starting off in the Premiership, Lucas Moura was pretty vocal about his support. And then going a little bit back to our sort of, well, my childhood legends and the sort of generational legends, we have Ronaldinho, Rivaldo, Cafu, a little bit less legendary, if you remember, Felipe Melo. Neymar has sort of been tied in with support. So it's kind of a who's who of who you know in Brazil. And this isn't the first time that these players have been associated with the support of right-wing leaders. Neymar supported the right-wing candidate 4 years ago, but these are the names being thrown around at the moment, and these are the sort of, you know, everybody knows these guys. We've all loved to watch them play football. These are the people sort of given their backing to, or gave their backing to Bolsonaro, whether it was through social media posts, supporting their other social media posts, or coming out and speaking on the news. To varying degrees, they've sort of been associated with supporting his candidacy.
Yeah, it's pretty still a cast you've just listed there.
It's like a great five-a-side team of right-wing
Pelé and Garrincha in there, you'd have the all-time great. Given how you describe the president, I mean, what's the rationale for these guys supporting someone who is as potentially extreme as you perhaps describe? And do they have a history of supporting politicians or political activity at all?
So here's the thing, and it was Rivaldo who said it best in, I think it was a Twitter post of his. He listed out the real problems in Brazil: economic crisis, unemployment, violence, health, education, and corruption. And saying and praising Bolsonaro for being someone who is unashamedly and bluntly tackling these things in his, tackled these things in his campaign and said, this is what I am going to sort out. With a complete sort of no-nonsense attitude. And then Rivaldo pointed out that, well, what's being discussed with the election is misogyny, racism and feminism as these kinds of other things that, yes, Bolsonaro is has extremely controversial ideas about, but what Rivaldo is voting for is tackling corruption. And anyone who's kind of been had an eye on Brazilian politics will know that they have a really, really weak history in the past decade and a half with politicians who are now serving jail time, huge corruption scandals, massive crime, things that are just in the minds of clearly the majority of the citizens, making their country extremely unsafe. And Bolsonaro has come along and said, "Well, this is exactly what I'm going to stop." And these footballers. I want it to stop as well. They are saying, yep, I support that. I support his tackling against corruption and crime. It is those two things are the big reasons why it seems that footballers, although I don't speak for each one of them as an individual, are sort of giving him their backing.
Yeah. Can I just ask? Sorry, Gary.
No, go.
Can I just ask then? I mean, like you said, that this decade and a half, you know, this, and I'm sure it probably goes back beyond there as well, with regards to, you know, politicians. And to be fair, you can probably look in any country and you'll find politicians, you know, as such. But this anti-corruption, anti-crime sort of mandate seems to be the mandate that actually is what people want. And from what you've just said there, especially with regards to Rivaldo, you know, that's the thing. That's what they've heard from all the rhetoric that's come out. That's what they've heard. Why is he not stopped short, if you like, of finding his winning mandate, his popular mandate, his mandate that's attracting the megastars, you know, the people that outside of politics that the Brazilian public obviously look to? Why, you might not know the answer to this, but why has he then taken that further and further, having already found a mandate that seems to strike a chord?
Are you talking about the kind of other things he's spoken out against
that are less disagreeable? Yes, the more polarising. I mean,
so it's not to say, and again, it's talking about this, you always sound like the risk when you're talking about the sides where you think these footballers are supporting him that seems logical. It almost feels like a defence. And he is, by my standards and probably many listener standards, indefensible in many ways. But the other things that he has kind of spoken out against, it's not as though they are incidental that he doesn't like. He has had all these homophobic comments. What has to also be remembered is that they're in Brazil, is a massive Catholic country, and lots of the supporters are Catholics, and they believe in very traditional traditional homes, nuclear families. There are circles of Brazil that will be supporting him on these grounds, in addition to his anti-corruption. So corruption, no one wants a country that's corrupt to live in that. I mean, that's something that everybody can get behind. And it's then after that that you kind of have the people who assume, okay, but maybe the new leftist guy would have not been corrupt. Some people aren't willing to take that risk, and they might go over to the other side because they also hold very traditional views about marriage. And, you know, there are other there are other grounds under which people are supporting Bolsonaro. Some of them will be racist, absolutely. Some of them will like the fact that he has spoken ill of indigenous groups and talked about sort of flattening their land and the things that we kind of raise our eyebrows and gasp about in the UK. And we'll see that and think that's unbelievable and what a shame. Obviously, that he does have those followers, and he does command that electorate as well. However, it is on the very base level that seems to kind of be attracting the kind of mainstream that it is just an anti-corruption thing. And then on top of that, I think it speaks to the wider state of Brazilian politics that the alternative of continuing with the what was considered as continuing as is was even worse than having in a guy who was willing to change everything, but also maybe racist, homophobic, transphobic guy.
Okay.
Which some people also get behind.
Okay. I mean, great answer. Thank you. That's brilliant. Thank you.
Trying to get there.
No. That's perfect for me.
It sounds like he's sort of won on a mandate of what he's not rather than what he is. The things he's against rather than the things he's for. And it's a bit like, you know, he's got elected because he's not the guy who was there before. I guess it's a bit like, in football terms, a bit like Ole Solskjaer being successful because he's not Mourinho.
Yeah, absolutely.
Players, you know, it's just sometimes people want to change. I guess we've mentioned about that sort of still list of Brazilian superstar footballers. Mm-hmm. So I'm just interested about the feelings of the footballers in the country and perhaps the lesser known ones. And do they follow similar lines? I'm going to throw a couple of quotes at you. This is going back to before the election. And there's a guy called Rodrigo Tapia, who was head of the fan group of Corinthians.
Yes.
And he put a quote out saying, just before the election, saying, "Those of you who support a guy who goes against our ideals," and he's talking about Bolsonaro here, "and throws our past right struggles in the garbage, please, if you want to keep supporting this guy, rethink your path inside our group." That's sort of, you know, but on the other hand, there's a guy, a journalist, a Brazilian sports journalist, Kafuri, and who said, "If we criticise players in the past for not looking further than their own belly buttons, we can't criticise them for speaking out now." So I guess there's in Brazil a sort of a discussion going on as to, or certainly was ahead of the election, as to A, whether footballers should be involved, and B, there's also football fans, at least, who are not necessarily supporting the stance of these stars.
Yeah, and so I've seen the sort of quotes from the head of Corinthians fan groups, and that was a big deal because Corinthians have players who had spoken out in favour of Bolsonaro. And so what seems almost alien to us, I think, is this idea that it is all tied in together. And sort of more Western or Eurocentric journalists might kind of question their involvement. And sometimes when we see Neil Warnock coming out today speaking about Brexit, and we think, oh, stick to football. Like, it's a kind of a knee-jerk reaction when our footballers chat politics. That, you know, Gary Lineker gets it all the time on Twitter, and he's not been a footballer for two decades. You know, we kind of say, oh, stick to what you're good at. Whereas it's just not not the culture in Brazil. That these are citizens of a country that has, that they are as engaged with as you or I might be with ours. They don't kind of sit like UK footballers might in this kind of ethereal realm of they're just so well paid and so outside of it that we kind of separate them from being like other citizens. They feel different. It's not the same in Brazil, where these people, they don't have the wages to suddenly to give their family and friends this out of the favelas. They don't have this magic magic ticket, this golden ticket like British footballers might have, especially in the Premier League. What they do have is family and friends who have been, unquestionably, I imagine most of them, if not all of them, have got family and friends affected by corruption and crime. And so for them to turn a blind eye would be irresponsible of them and rude of them to kind of turn their backs on loved ones and family and friends. And so they are right involved, and so they should be. They're citizens. They have an absolute right to express their opinions. It just is, doesn't sit quite as well the other side of the Atlantic when we're all a little bit confused about that, because it doesn't really happen here. We don't get all of our English World Cup winning team coming out and speaking about Brexit or tweeting about it, whereas all the Brazilians I've sort of mentioned have they've done Instagrams, they've done tweets and all the rest of it. It's different, and I think it's okay, and it should be encouraged. If anything, should be encouraged in this country, but it's great that they do it, and obviously with politics and football, when they are sort of completely intertwined as they are in Brazil, out comes division, and then you have fan groups disagreeing with players, disagreeing with managers, disagreeing with this and that, and that's what happens.
Let's do throw another question at you. Anybody listening to this will obviously very quickly realise that you have a really good understanding and empathy with this situation and an affinity with the area. So can you give us a little background about what your particular interest in the subject? I guess for many football fans, things such as this could be dismissed as a political sideshow and perhaps part of a particularly unpleasant and worldwide and growing sideshow in a part of the world where it's hardly unusual. So what's your particular interest in Brazil and Bolsonaro?
So I recently spent a year reporting around Latin America, not just on sport, but on current affairs and all sorts, and exposing myself to the news and to the people who were talking about their questionable and corrupt governments. I was in Peru when their president sort of got all impeached, and then you do the tour into Bolivia where their leftist leader Evo Morales is kind of manipulating the constitution in order to stay in power for another term beyond the two terms specified by law. So you've kind of got him doing that, and then you move into Chile, which has its own horrifying history. And then I was in Argentina when obviously they were having all these protests in the summer and this IMF bailout, and it's kind of the region that is always just tearing, has sort of two sides tearing at one another, and there's just this unbreakable tension all over the continent. And then you kind of go on this kind of corruption tourism over into Brazil, and then it's all happening there as well. And so that's kind of my vested interest in the area. I've just kind of followed South American politics quite closely as a writer and as a human being. Then there is obviously the human element of I follow the news and I see someone like Bolsonaro in charge, and it is despairing to see, you know, a leader of a really developing nation and such a massive country as Brazil get to a stage where they consider leadership by someone with some incredibly backwards ideas to be the best option. And it's when that happens that, you know, we've all felt one way or another about Trump and thought, in my case anyway, isn't that very upsetting that he can say such things in his campaign or be exposed to have said such things and still be elected? And, you know, on that level, just kind of on a very human level, I feel a very vested interest, because I really like the people who I met in South America, and obviously I keep up to date with it, and I very much intend to go back soon. So I guess that would be my kind of connection.
Gotcha. Okay, Stu?
Yeah, it's fun. I mean, like I say, I love these shows. I absolutely love them. You can tell by who your childhood heroes were, Brazilian football. I'll show our generational gap in a minute. But with regards to, you know, you talk about footballers in this country being almost lampooned for daring either to have an opinion or to voice a political opinion. In Brazil, I mean, my childhood Brazilian was the 82 side, you know, with Zico and obviously with Socrates. Now, while you've been chatting, I've been trying to sort of rack my brains for an equivalent, you know, in this country, in English or even in British football, and I can't come up with one. Whether Gary can, you know, I don't know. But obviously, I suppose my question is, are are footballers taken more seriously in Brazil with regards to, you know, political opinion, a cultural thing, because, you know, like you say, the public in general are very much more political than they are in this country? Or is it because of, I suppose, the appeal of football? Footballers can reach such a big audience, as Socrates did, you know, when you look at Corinthian democracy and, you know, and those sorts of things. You know, the footballers have such a massive impact in Brazil. Is it because footballers are taken seriously, or is it purely because the public listen to footballers, unlike they do in this country?
It's a combination of things. I feel there is this kind of almost, I feel as though there is this kind of British passive aggressive slash humour slash sarcasm, where we see someone who we see play football every weekend and they say something. It's almost like it took the British public about 7 years to get used to Danny Dyer saying political things, and even then it's not necessarily accepted anymore without people kind of doing it ironically or laughing a bit before they realise he's actually might be talking some sense. And then it's the same with footballers, and I feel as though we can't just quite get on board with the fact that maybe they've got some good ideas as well, and have a vested interest in the country that they live in and work in and pay taxes in. And I just say that it's something that we cannot. It's like a barrier where, you know, everyone's always waxing lyrical about Frank Lampard's Latin GCSE, as though this is like he is the peak intelligent footballer because he has this Latin GCSE. Don't even know what grade he got. The point is, he got a Latin GCSE, and Latin's hard. So, and he for that reason is the smartest footballer. So if he talks in politics, people might listen. But other than that, we're not really ready. It's just not a thing. And because they have these salaries and they're almost they're untouchable, and people harken back to these days where you could have a pint with a footballer, but that doesn't happen anymore. You feel as though because they're earning 200K a week, well, they can't feel the effects of or impending effects of Brexit like we do. They have so much money that this country could be run by the raving loony party and they'd still be fine or whatever. There's that element. They are a cut above these footballers, and by that I mean they just sit outside. I feel as this is my impression, and I feel as though it is an impression that creates the kind of apathy people to have towards footballers' opinions, that they don't need to take an interest because they've got loads of money. And money talks, and ultimately it's at the heart of pretty much every discussion is cost. It is not something they have to think about because they're so well paid. So in Brazil, that is obviously just not the case. You also have the fact that in the Brazilian history is so tied in, and its identity is so tied in with the idea that they had to win a World Cup. They had to show who they were on the world stage, and the football stage is the same in Uruguay. They built an identity around showing the world. They put themselves on the map through football. Brazil, as you were saying at the top of this podcast, Brazil is football and samba. You think of those things. It's football and samba, and you think of the flag, and you think of Ronaldinho's shirt. That's what I think of. But really, there's this, that's the Brazil we get, and it's the Brazil we see with its exports in Europe, when actually the truth is so much more complicated, because simply Brazil is inflicted, is plagued with corruption and crime. And these people, Ronaldinho, he may come over and play for Barcelona and we see his tricks and he's smiling all the time. We don't know we don't necessarily know how he feels about his nation, though, and how they're led, and how closely tied in he feels with the kind of history of his country. And football and politics in Brazil is so tied in together that they have evolved with each other. And we were talking, you mentioned just now, I mean, yes, footballers in the past in Brazil, it has been a thing where presidents have kind of tried to harness football as a political vehicle. And of course, that's been a massive part of Brazil's history as well. And it's not a long history. The thing is, Brazil, as its kind of modern capitalist country, especially since the dictatorship, or since colonialisation. It's not been long. There's not much to it yet. And so football has just been a massive part, pretty much for anyone who's alive's remembered existence.
Brilliant.
Yeah. I was just sort of thinking when Stu mentioned about political policy football. I think it's not that this country is typical of Europe. I think it's pretty untypical of Europe. So a few things came to my mind while Stu was talking. I mean, Di Canio was very vocal about politics in Italy and the right-wing politics, and over in Spain, Gerard Piqué is castigated every time he plays for Spain because he voiced opinions about Catalan independence. So I guess it's us that the sort of the unusual one in this country. But I just wonder how many footballers have got a political interest. I suspect at least some do have, but it may be the fact that they know if they speak out they'll get castigated and took to the cleans by the press of various different shades of political opinion. For having an opinion, I mean, just Sol Campbell stuck his head above the parapets a few months ago and got ripped to pieces for it. So I guess there might be that the press might be the sort of putting the lid on people's on footballers' political comments, perhaps. So you just mentioned about the history. So just very briefly, and I think we probably sort of got a drift of it earlier. How did Bolsonaro come about? So I suspect it's probably because of a reaction to the past regimes. Is that correct?
Yeah, it really is a backlash. As this kind of rebel, he's been in politics for ages. He's been a congressman for I think 30 years, so he's not this new man on the political scene. But he has sold himself in opposition to what they had already. And he how it's come about is just Brazil undergoing an absolute torrid time, where the Workers' Party and the leftist leaders of the past 15 years have just been impeached and corrupted and going into prison and making all sorts of deals with construction companies, which is something you see all around Latin America. And then this has kind of led to people saying enough is enough. And finally, this guy is saying this, I will. And it's he's saying his transparent politics really appeal to people who feel like the country has taken a huge downturn with all the corruption. His transparency and his honesty, that honesty and that bluntness and that transparency is where the same statements come from as saying, you know, he would rather kill his son, he's rather his son died than come out as a homosexual to him. That kind of no-nonsense, I'm just going to come out and say that because of what I think, he says what he thinks kind of guy, like Trump. That's the kind of thing that appeals to people. And you have to think that, okay, he's got this, okay, is he a role model? Is he, you know, are you sure? Because he doesn't sound like one, his opposition may say. But what you have to look at is the leftists that have been in charge. Do they have a moral compass? Many of them have made terrible deals and fiddled with government numbers and finances. And you think, well, are they equally, is their kind of ethical, is their ethical anchor any as good as Bolsonaro's? Because they've made terrible decisions for the whole country and selfish decisions. And he's come along and said, well, I won't do that. Yes, he comes with all this other stuff that he says bluntly and is unashamedly these things, but he's at least he's saying, oh well, I'm not afraid to shoot the corrupt. I'm not afraid to get rid of this in the kind of most blunt way possible. And it's excitement about that. It's excitement about the idea of a Brazil without corruption, a Brazil without crime, a Brazil where it's safe again, and they don't have to worry that the president is fiddling with cash behind the scenes because of a construction company wants a deal for a bridge. You know, he's saying, nope, that's not me. I'm going to tackle that. And the people who do it, I'm not only just going to put them in jail, I might torture them. Like, that's the thing. He's like this. He says that. And that's the thing. And he says everything people want them to say. And for that reason, he gets a pass with a lot of people on the things he then adds. And so they're like, okay, well, okay, I don't necessarily agree with torture, but at least he's going to stop the crime. Whereas this other person, this leftist, who can't necessarily promise me that he's not going to be just like the other lefties we've had, they blame leftist politics. A lot of Brazil says Brazil cannot exist under a leftist government anymore. It can't exist because it's just been too corrupt. It's the confusion, like so many places around the world, that poor regimes are poor because they are left or right, not because the regime itself is filled with poor and corrupt individuals. A corrupt individual, in my mind, is not a lefty or a righty. They are for themselves, they are greedy, and they will follow the political alignment that gets them into power and that gets them money and gets them into a position where they can exploit. So, but however, those people happen to exist under the last lefty government, and so lefty politics is blamed, and the government is blamed, and communism is attacked, and things like this. So it remains to be seen, because now we've got this change, and they're thinking, okay, it's a new government, right-wing government, can't happen this time because it's a change. Remains to be seen whether those same individuals who exist in all countries all around the world manage to infiltrate the government, and again, with this corruption, the idea is that it will be different because Bolsonaro is so no-nonsense, and he will shoot them, he will do this, he just won't let it happen, and it may not be ethical, but at least it won't happen.
Stu?
Yeah, it's like you said, it's interesting what you've said. You know what you've said there, where the main statement, I suppose, was part of the first question I asked. You know, that main statement, this anti-corruption, is almost given a pass for what follows and what comes out. Do you see this as a turning point in Brazilian politics? Is there, I mean, obviously it's early days, he's only just come to power, but do you see this now whereby even in opposition, people are aware that actually it's anti-corruption that's the issue? And you've made a great point, you know, it's not necessarily the left are corrupt and the right aren't, it's corrupt people, and wherever those corrupt people happen to be, creates a corrupt regime. You know, you're absolutely right, but do you see this now almost as a turning point in Brazilian politics whereby it's not so much the public have spoken, what the public have done is demonstrated their desire for anti-corruption by voting in an incredibly contentious and controversial candidate, but I suppose that's how they make their point, that's how the Brazilian public have been able to make a point that this has now become the most important thing. Do you think now left-wing opposition in Brazil will recognise this and will start to have that as their mandate as well?
Yeah, in the same way that politics in the US is never going to be the same, and to an extent in the UK after Brexit is never going to be the same, one side of the political divide is going to have to look at themselves and think, how have we been so bad or so poor or so neglectful or so like ill-informed that this other side has managed to gain such momentum, even though they have an extreme leader, that they are now in charge? In that sense, politics around the world is, I feel, undergoing a little bit of a shift. And obviously, it remains to be seen whether there really is a shift, because generations die off and come in, and it's hard to kind of teach all the teachings that we've learned from this generation to the next. But I think there is a change, and I think that the other change comes with the way that votes are kind of fought for on the internet. I don't think many parties have been ready for that. I don't think many parties have been ready for the kind of the last 8 years in terms of how elections have been won or lost. And I think in Brazil's case specifically, I think that Bolsonaro, the other change that could happen is he has kind of been unashamedly pro-dictatorship, in that he has spoken favorably about Brazil's dictatorship in the 60s through to the 80s. And so he likes that. And so will the change be that I think there was an article by Brian Winter in America's Quarterly that was talking about how military dictatorships don't happen through military coups anymore. They happen at the ballot box, and they are voted for because people lose faith in democracy. And going back to what you said, the real change that's come out of Brazil is that half of Brazilians, and some Brazilians have gone on interviews saying democracy just doesn't work here. It doesn't work in our country. And it seems ludicrous, like especially in the Western world and in the UK, it seems crazy to say that, but when all they've had is disappointment, corruption and crime under democratic governments, and all they've had to do is they've been choosing between electing this guy who's got crazy right-wing views or this leftist guy who's going to sell them down the water and be corrupt, if that's who they've got to vote for, then democracy hasn't worked for them. That's why they are so disillusioned. And a guy comes on who's openly almost anti-democracy and says, vote for me, and everyone does. That's the change. It can't not be a change. People have to address that democracy in Brazil and in developing countries all over the world, and even some first world countries, people have lost faith in it because they have felt so disenfranchised and so hard done by, and that the leaders have just completely let them down. Democracy in Brazil going forward, I don't know if it can be the same without massive change being enforced first. And that change, I have no idea what that looks like, because I'm sure we think of democracy as this kind of almost infallible structure. Okay, people vote, and then the person gets in as the right person for the job. That person can trick their way, you know, and then they change, and then they are subject to other forces once they're in, and then they make decisions that are awful for the country, and then they put the country on the knees, like has happened with Brazil. And so, yeah, to the answer to your question, I think this has changed things. I don't know what that change looks like yet, but that change, something has to happen for the world to kind of avoid an absolute meltdown.
Yeah. Just a quick couple of one very quick question. We're talking about corruption a lot in Brazil. Do you think, or have you got any more authoritative information, that is the domestic game in Brazil corrupt in any way?
So CONMEBOL obviously gets such a difficult time. I know CONMEBOL is the Latin American governing body, or South American governing body, and they get incredibly tough, hard rap because, I mean, I'm sure you saw all the Copa Libertadores stuff. Yeah. And that kind of mismanagement, poor decision-making, questionable financial distribution, and that infects the game too. Yeah. Bolsonaro, he is not like the politicians before who may walk onto a football pitch and endear himself to fans in that way. He's not that kind of guy. He doesn't play the game like that, because that's the game he hates. It's the game he's rallying against. He doesn't want the shiny politician who puts on a Ronaldinho shirt and everyone goes mad, or hugs, you know, whoever is the latest star. He's saying, you know, you can, you know, love me or loathe me, but, you know, people are voting for him, so it's working for him. He is unashamedly him, and he has, without kind of soliciting it, got all these big football names backing him. And you know, Philippe Melo coming out on the pitch and backing him in that sense, and he kind of has them in the palm of his hand in that way, because they are supporting his policies on a very pure sense, rather than him kind of going out of his way and making visits to training grounds, whatever might happen, or you might get in you might expect to see on the front page of the paper in the UK or wherever, and have done it in Brazil before. The corruption in the Brazilian game, whether it won't be something that he's had in his mandate, or he's going to say, okay, we need to stamp this out. He wants to stamp out corruption. If someone is corrupt, it will be and they are found out in the Brazilian game, he will have the same, I imagine, no nonsense approach to it and say, this has to end, you're out. It's going to be a no tolerance approach. Yeah. And the Brazilian game itself, I mean, that it's just such a can of worms throughout the leagues, and you don't just have necessarily corruption that, as we'd expect it, that we've kind of experienced in Europe a little bit. You've kind of got other things like dodgy dodgy training coaches and academies and youth squads and misdemeanors happening with that kind of dynamic, as you kind of get in Argentina as well, and has been exposed recently. So I mean, you'd have to hope that, although it's not been a part of what his kind of his rhetoric has been, that, you know, maybe that is something he'd attack, but it's certainly not something that he's going to deal with in the first sort of 2 weeks of his presidency.
You sort of segued across into the question we're going to follow up on, saying that, you know, is this another politician wrapping himself in the glory of football? And obviously you sort of answered that question for me. So sort of just picking one of the footballers that you mentioned earlier. So let's look at Ronaldinho in particular. He's probably one of the best known players of the list, especially for any younger listener. So what's Ronaldinho's stance, and how does he see this toying up with the mandate that Bolsonaro was offering?
So Ronaldinho, I mean, so Ronaldinho has met with Bolsonaro. He's been pictured holding his book. He's posted about him. He's posted anti-corruption messages. He said, for a better Brazil, this is who he supports. You know, this is what he wants. And people have obviously taken that, especially in Europe, as quite upsetting. And Barcelona have distanced themselves from him and Rivaldo, because they were on the Legends Tour at the time. They distanced themselves because obviously we have a set of values in these Western European countries where people like Bolsonaro are kind of are condemned. And and I would say rightfully so. But people without Ronaldinho's consent, European fans have co-opted him and his brand and said he's one of us. And yet he never asked for that, I don't feel. He unashamedly went out on the pitch and did his thing and smiled, and everyone loved it. And he was pure samba, and he had all this magic. And people have kind of taken him and thought, well, that's what he is. And it's almost been a two-dimensional view where we thought, yeah, Ronaldinho, on a superficial level, he's a great, an unbelievable player. We all loved him. And what a smile he had. He was, like, for a lot of people, represented in the noughties. Like, he was Brazilian football in all of its magic, crystallised. And yet, it turns out he isn't a two-dimensional samba boy. He's a three-dimensional guy with family and friends in Brazil who are going to have been exposed and experienced crime and corruption, and he's going to be as angry. And he's from Puerto Alegre, deep south, where all the Bolsonaro vote, you know, where if the further south you get, the more intense in Bolsonaro territory you get. And so what can people expect, really? It's not to say that he's homophobic, it's not to say that he's racist. It's not to say these things. It's to say that he doesn't like corruption. You know, and it does come as a shock to people who have only seen the Ronaldinho who does Elasticos. He's actually this other guy who has this complete life and investment in a politics and people who he shares their blood with, and you know, and that suddenly he's not. He's not a Catalan? Oh, what? I mean, we were a little bit confused by that he goes home and he's got this whole life that means more to him than anything else. And the other thing is, I feel as though it's maybe bold to say, a lot of Brazilian football is obviously, as in Europe, they come from almost nothing. But a little bit different is that nothing in Brazil looks a lot different to the nothing in the UK. It's a lot more. It is a lot more dangerous. And so, Brazilian footballers who manage to make enough money to leave that nothing, they are. It's not as romantic as it might be in the UK to kind of go back and return and be all charitable and think about it and. Make a documentary. They have left and they had to get out because they may not have grown up had they not got out. And so, and they leave now and they kind of co-opt the upper middle class lifestyle. they, and therefore they co-opt the middle, upper middle class politicians. Bolsonaro is really popular amongst the upper middle class. They are now, they have entered that elite. They care about security because they've got great houses to protect. So they are part of that now rather than the poorer parts of the country who are, for the most part, Bolsonaro fans. You know, he has, you might say, the poor vote. And Brazilian footballers, they're not necessarily a part of that world anymore because they did everything they could to leave it behind.
Yeah.
It's not the case with everybody, but people like Ronaldinho, it does seem to be the case. People like Lucas Moura may be the case. Juninho Pernambuco, not the case. So you do have outliers, people who have kind of turned their back on that kind of new lifestyle that they can now afford.
Yeah. I guess what you're saying is that although we might in Europe might paint people who support this guy as being naive and a little easily manipulated, but there's sound and logical reasons for the things that they're doing. So, Stu.
It seems to me that, like you said, I mean, especially Ronaldinho, if you use Ronaldinho as the example, he's almost the antithesis, isn't he? You're the complete opposite of everything that Bolsonaro is, and yet it seems that, I might be wrong, I can only speak from my own point of view, but certainly this legitimisation or this input from, you know, incredibly world-famous Brazilian footballers seems to have drawn attention to a country that everybody knows about and everybody, like we said, associates with samba and football, but certainly Brazilian politics, hand on heart, is not something I know a lot about. But certainly as soon as the stories came in with regards to the criticism of Ronaldinho supporting this presidential candidate, made me take an interest in what was happening. Do you think that had this, I suppose, this almost Brazilian, like I said, Brazilian legitimisation by the Brazilian footballers, do you think there would be as much uproar, as much care, as much passion in Europe about what was going on in Brazil? Or do you think it would have, to put it bluntly, quietly gone about its business and nobody really cared?
So do you mean that the Brazilians living in Europe?
Yeah, I mean, just Europeans in general. For me, this sounds awful. My interest in the Brazilian election only peaked once the stories of Ronaldinho and Rivaldo came into my sphere via BBC Sport app and so on. But had they not have, I'm not sure that I would have been as aware as I am.
Yeah, so that's true with a lot of things that happen outside the, I mean, even the UK, right? I mean, there's levels to it, isn't there? I mean, we follow US news pretty closely because it gets a lot of space on BBC News, and it gets a lot of space because it gets a lot of clicks. BBC News does, and The Guardian and other publications, they give a lot of space to Bolsonaro, but it's not necessarily as much as Macron gets, and certainly not as much as Theresa May gets, or whatever. It does, however, infiltrate our spheres when there's a good story about a footballer who does get loads of news clicks, who says something that people may not have a sort of loose knowledge about, that kind of then through that they go and click on other stuff. So yeah, absolutely. Without these guys, there wouldn't have been as much of a chat in Europe. There would have been still this kind of Trump of the tropics narrative that would have been peddled by the media without the footballer interest, because it's like, okay, it happened in the US and now it's happening in Brazil. We've got this other kind of outspoken, right-wing, unashamed, anti-establishment guy in charge. That would have been the kind of way I'm sure a lot of people would have found out about him on a sort of a superficial level anyway, through the footballers. Absolutely, we kind of get this other angle where we're like, okay, so Ronaldinho likes him. I like Ronaldinho. Why does he like him? I didn't realize. You know, I didn't realize Ronaldinho was a racist. Like, you know, and people take that kind of view this time. They're like, oh, Rivaldo likes him as well. Blimey, all these people I really like. And then Lucas Moura, who's playing right now in the Prem. So there are lots of avenues in for this one. Lots more than just the Trump of the Tropics avenue that is going to appeal to a certain group of people. But absolutely, when footballers you know, Ronaldinho's got 41 million Twitter followers or whatever. When he gets, and you know, not all of them are Brazilian. When he gets stuck into something, there are gonna be stories about it, and absolutely, it's gonna raise awareness. And that's certainly, you know, it didn't last very long, but there was at the time a little bit of a media blowout of like, oh well, our childhood stars are ruined because they like this guy. And then a week later, that wasn't the story anymore. But there was a time when there was quite a lot of space being dedicated to these Brazilians who are not just the samba-loving, smiling face, two-dimensional folk we thought they were who scored great goals. They've actually got their own sort of agenda to take care of, and they're more than what we thought.
Brilliant. Absolutely fascinating.
Yeah. As always the case, times are enemy on these sort of things, and you know, we get involved in conversations and time races away, and this is absolutely no exception to that. There's still a few points we want to cover. So with regard to football in Brazil and Bolsonaro, how do you think football will be affected, if at all, by the election? And if it's relevant, how the players who have supported him, will that make any difference to the game in Brazil as well?
So you might have, like you said about the Corinthians fan groups, you might have groups like that. There are protests planned. And so whether those protests happen in the football stadium, and then you've got players who are Bolsonaro fans who may be targeted, it's in terms of the game itself and the way it's played and the kind of makeshift way that Brazilian league often works anyway, I don't think that it's going to sort of change the fabric of the league or the teams, but the dynamic between fans, players, owners, potentially. You've got people who have been, taken controversial behaviour on the pitch. Felipe Melo dedicating a goal to Bolsonaro. If he does that now, and Bolsonaro has just done something that's incited some protests in amongst the stands, that's going to be a clash. And similarly, you kind of have the supporters groups who have been outspoken about it. These kinds of things could materialize again. It's really early days right now, and the first protests are kind of just happening, but I mean I'd be surprised if it didn't leak over. And where you have this kind of apolitical space in British football, where people may sing about leaving the EU or Brexit, you know, out of foreign player, it's kind of, rather than just being on the fringes of the British football stadium, it will be felt inside Brazilian football stadiums by everyone. Everyone, you know, the footballers themselves, the fans. Politics will affect people in a much more sort of deep way, I feel, rather than this kind of British attitude where we are able to get away from it with football. That's where we escape. We don't need to think about the Brexit stuff when we go to see a match. It's a world apart. I don't think that'll be the case in Brazil as it ever hasn't been.
Sure. Steve?
I suppose for me, the more interesting point actually is the Brazilian national team. I know you've just talked about, you know, demonstration within clubs, targeting certain players who maybe come out in support or against, and fans who are for and against. And you certainly get that in league games, and you get it all around the world. As Gary's mentioned, you know, there's a lot of countries, a lot of teams, a lot of players who are politically motivated. But with regards to the Brazilian national team, I mean, obviously it is so beloved of the Brazilian people. Do you think there will be any, any impact within the national team? Do you see it causing friction between the national squad when it meets up, whether the manager is pro or against? You know, do you think it will permeate into the national team?
Yeah, I think that it might. There might be. We might pick up that, okay, one of them is a big Bolsonaro fan and the other isn't, and that someone in the team isn't, and they can't play, you know, won't. I just feel as though if that's ever a clash, they will just put it behind them for football, because football, putting on the sort of Brazil shirt, is this kind of God-given right in Brazil. Not God-given right, it's all God-given reward. And so, that, I feel as though, may transcend if they're playing away at Spain in a friendly or at a tournament, they're not going to have their political rivalries on the pitch unless one of them has been directly affected by a policy that has had a seriously detrimental positive impact on their life, and the contrary has happened to someone else and they clash. They might be a bit more outspoken. We might see a few more tweets. I don't think that the way we consume Brazilian football and the way our press reports it will expose anything deeper than what we already know about the players who support and do not support Bolsonaro. In the same way that, okay, so Janinho was very disappointed by his countrymen and fellow footballers who came out and supported Bolsonaro, but the fallout or any backlash, I feel as though, would have been felt to some extent already in the build-up, because tensions run highest almost in the campaign trail. We would have seen it. Now it's like, okay, what happens next? So again, there's this kind of unpredictable space we're moving into. Let's see what happens. I think something would have to go very bad for us to see it kind of permeate the national team.
Okay.
Just one very quick question before we move on to our eternal last question. How do you see this panning out? I mean, because Bolsonaro's he's got an empty account at the moment, and he's done nothing particularly bad. Talking is one thing, doing things is something else. Do you think it's likely that in the future the players who supported him may regret that or decide that it was a bad idea, given he starts doing some of the things, the more outlandish things that he's advocated?
Yeah, I mean, he is kind of already on a little bit of a warpath with his words. Yes, that's words, but you just feel like, in terms of the question, kind of how is this going to play out? I think he is the Brazilian kind of the good things about Brazil and the Brazilian structures will be easier to kind of dismantle and rebuild in his image than the American ones, because they were built on more fragile foundations. And so the way I see this, I do see this getting much worse before it gets any better. And I think similarly to in the US, people will back him all the way and say, change, any change is good. He's going to have to upset a lot of people who support him right now for a U-turn on this. And so he's spoken about pro-dictatorship. If there are movements towards a dictatorship, okay, we can reassess then to see what the situation looks like. And okay, does change in a different direction look more likely under those circumstances? But as things stand, I think this gets, he probably is going to get quite a lot of what he wants. He does have a big mandate, and I think he's going to get quite a lot of what he wants before he doesn't.
Okay. Do you want to throw a quick one in, Stu, before I give the final question?
I mean, for me, you might not be able to answer this, but obviously, Freddie, incredibly knowledgeable about South American politics, particularly in Brazil, incredibly knowledgeable about football. In your opinion, if the Brazilian public were pushed, is it football first, politics second, or politics first, football second, in terms of their priority?
Oh, I mean...
Sorry.
Yeah, it's tough. I couldn't say for sure, and I feel as though other people give very more certain answers one way or another, depending on sort of their own experiences. Right now, it does feel like football, dare I say, is playing a little bit second fiddle in the country, but because for most of the people living in the country, there's something much more exciting right now than finishing the quarterfinals of the World Cup. And that exciting thing is this huge change that's going to revolutionise a country that's, hoping that they think is going to revolutionise a country that's seen some of its worst years, and, or at least that's what a lot of people feel. So perhaps right now they're more excited about that than, you know, upcoming friendlies. There's no international tournament this year. Oh, there's the Copa America in the summer, and that's hosted in Brazil. You know, we can see how, if sentiment changes then, if that manages to unite Brazil a bit. But at the moment, it's all about the politics right now. Whether, I mean, I'm sure anyone, that being said, I'm sure any Brazilian would, you know, vote for whoever you told them to if you told them they were going to get a Brazil cap. So, you know, yeah. There's always that.
No, that's fine. I knew it was a difficult question. It was just your, like I said, you seem so well read, you know, well written about everything. I fully back your opinion. I'm quite happy to take your opinion.
I'm sure there'll be Brazilophiles listening right now, and I apologise to them who are screaming something completely different. What can I say? It's just my opinion.
That's right. That's the beauty of this. That's what we want.
It was a great question, Stu, and a great answer as well.
Cheers.
Final question to our guest is always a signed one, so, you know, brace yourself, here he comes. So can football exist in a political vacuum, or does the passion engendered by the game so easily lend itself to being a political tool? In short, is the political football inevitable?
I would just think absolutely, yes. It's absolutely inevitable. Football cannot exist in a vacuum, although it gets pretty close in the UK, I feel. Not somewhere like Brazil.
That's brilliant.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Any final thoughts, Steve?
Freddie, if you've got something to say.
I was just going to say on that question itself, I feel as though the fan wants the footballer to maybe exist. The Western fan, anyway, wants football to exist in this political vacuum where we can use it as this form of escapism, because that's what it is. People escape with football on weekends.
Yes.
That's unrealistic. We can't. We love to think of footballers as these two-dimensional characters, like we were talking about Ronaldinho earlier. We love to think of them. That was something that happened with the England team this summer. They started to be like real people to us. It's very weird, and we liked that. But when let's see what happens if they start talking politics. But, you know, for a lot of the times, footballers, you know, we only get the kind of media impression of them when we see them on the pitch on the TV. They are people with family, friends, colleagues who are affected by politics, who, you know, they got family, friends and colleagues who were not necessarily just footballers. It would be irresponsible, and is irresponsible, for footballers not to vote, like I believe is irresponsible for anyone not to vote, and certainly to remain silent when the nation that they live in is calling out for guidance. They do lend themselves to being political tools, but as with any election, anything, any footballers, any celebrity talking out, all we can hope is that what they say is guided or aided by or mitigated by, in some circumstances, by an informed electorate. And there is nothing more important than an informed electorate. Footballers form part of that electorate. So I do not think it can exist in the vacuum, no.
What a brilliant answer. What a brilliant answer. Thank you for that. Stu, any final thoughts?
Yeah, I feel sorry for whoever's on the next episode who's got to follow that answer with that question. Like I say, this is the best. Working for these Football Times, we get some great experiences. But this series, Series 1 and Series 2, this is by far the best thing I have ever done in terms of sitting, listening, learning from experts who just open my mind, blow my mind, and then just leave me wanting to go off and read something else. I can't ask for any more. I can't praise you any higher, Freddie. The fact that when we've finished, I am going straight out to have a look at what else I can find out about what you've just talked about today. It was fascinating, absolutely fascinating.
Well, thank you. It was great to be on the podcast. And obviously, anyone who has agreed or disagreed with things I've said this evening, which I'm sure there'll be people in both camps, feel free to get in touch.
Yeah, that's great. I could only just echo what Stu said. I mean, it's a fantastic part, and again, time's raced away because we're having so much fun. But massive thanks, Freddie, for bringing on your knowledge, your passion about Brazil and politics and football. It's been an education.
Cheers. Thanks, guys.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, so that was the political football, talking about Bolsonaro in Brazil, the home of samba football, and how politics is affecting the game in South America. So thank you for listening, and I hope you'll catch us again on the next political football, where we'll be looking at another subject equally interesting. Thank you, and goodbye.
Many thanks for joining us today on The Lob, a These Football Times production. For more of our content, check out our award-winning print magazine featuring some of the game's foremost writers, artists and photographers, exploring areas of the game rarely covered in high-end print. For now, we look forward to you joining us again soon.